Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll visit with some Vietnam veterans and talk about the 1973 peace accords and the release of our Vietnam prisoners of war. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Joining Community Forces Minnesota has been established to collaborate and synchronize community resources to support veterans, service members, and their families. Early this spring, a series of Joining Community Forces Minnesota meetings are taking place around our state. I know you all have heard of our Yellow Ribbon Networks, and in fact, there are Yellow Ribbon Networks established in each of the communities that are hosting the upcoming Joining Community Forces Minnesota meetings. This is a way for us to tap into the movement that was started by First Lady Michelle Obama and Dr. Jill Biden. Their program, called Joining Forces, highlights employment resources and transition assistance. Hosting Joining Community Forces Minnesota meetings is a way to ensure we are not leaving any stone unturned when it comes to supporting our military members and their families. For information on upcoming meetings in your area, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. As I said at the opening, today's show, our focus is the Vietnam War, the peace accords that were entered into on January 27th, 1973, which basically laid out the framework for returning our Vietnam POWs, and that process started on March 4th, 1973. And on today's show, to help us talk about those events, we're going to have on Bob Behrens from the Vietnam Veterans of Minnesota, David Claypool, commander of the Minnesota American XPOWs, and retired Navy Captain Arvin Chauncey, who was a POW for 6 years, and he'll be on the second half of this show. But joining me now is Bob Behrens. Bob, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
It's good to be back. Thank you for having me.
Bob, for those listeners that may not have heard you the last couple of times you were on with me, you're a Vietnam veteran, and you served a long tour.
1968 to 1970.
You actually extended that when you were over there.
Yeah, we involuntarily volunteered.
We were having so much fun,
you
stuck around a little longer.
Right.
And you are the president of Chapter 290, St. Cloud Vietnam Veterans of America.
I have that distinct honor of being the president. Yes, I do.
And you're sitting in today. I'm glad to have you here, but we've got the commander of the VVA Minnesota has been out ill for a while. How's Jim doing?
Jim's doing real well. He's up and about. He's walking better with the help of a cane. Therapy is going real well, and he hopes to be back real soon.
Well, we hope to have him back on the show soon, and I'm sure he'll be listening. And
looking forward to it.
Making sure you're doing a good job for us today.
Let's hope.
Jim, or Bob, we want to talk a little bit today about the peace accords in Paris that concluded on January 27th, 1973. As you know, I'm a Vietnam veteran, but I came back on May 15th, 1972, and the peace accords were going on, as I understand it, for about 5 years, on and off.
Yeah, about, even back in 1968, they were negotiations and sitting down and talking about it. There was a lot of controversy, a lot of give and take. But it was going on for many years. At the very beginning, they had a lot of discussions on how the tables were going to be set up, who was going to sit where and what flags, how they're. So it was very, intricate.
Contentious.
Very contentious. There was no love lost at those tables.
And Henry Kissinger was representing the United States.
Yes, he was, yeah.
And it was a complicated deal because we had the North Vietnamese, we had the Viet Cong, and we had the South Vietnamese.
Yes, we did.
So there were four parties involved in it, and some of them didn't want to recognize each other.
No, they didn't. One other one was the Revolutionary Government of the Republic of South Vietnam. Everybody had ideas of what they wanted and how they wanted to end this conflict, this war. And it took a lot of patience, a lot of meetings between Kissinger and the North Vietnam. There was a lot of secret talks going on between two parties, and there was a lot of give and take, a lot.
And over all those years of the war, there were a lot of prisoners of war that were unaccounted for and that we wanted to recover.
Yeah, there was a lot. There was, you're talking a couple thousand Americans that were listed as missing, POW, MIA. There really wasn't any hardcore number as far as POWs and MIAs. It was kind of a best guess estimate from the military, but the North Vietnam used the POW MIA as a bargaining chip, and they used it very extensively throughout the negotiations. They knew we wanted our men back, and like I said, they used it as a negotiating tool.
We're speaking to Bob Behrens, the president of Chapter 290 of the St. Cloud Vietnam Veterans of America on Minnesota Military Radio, and our topic today is the Vietnam War, the peace accords, which were successfully signed on January 27, 1973, which eventually led to the return of our American POWs that started on March 4, 1973. Bob, in my understanding that they called this Operation Homecoming, and it was a series of diplomatic negotiations that in January 73 made possible the return of 566 American prisoners of war held by North Vietnam. And on February 12, 1973, three C-141 transports flew to Hanoi, North Vietnam, and one C-9A aircraft was sent to Saigon, South Vietnam, to pick up released prisoners of war. The first flight of 40 U.S. prisoners of war left Hanoi on a C-141A, later known as the Hanoi Taxi, and is now in a museum. From February 12th to April 4th, there were 54 C-141 missions flying out of Hanoi, bringing the former POWs home. You know, and I can remember seeing that first flight hit the ground in the United States, and it was, for me as a Vietnam veteran, that was one of the best moments I can remember.
It was a joyous time for, I think, all Vietnam veterans to finally put somewhat of an end to this war, and bring our POWs back home where they belonged.
And that was a start. And for our listeners, if you want to just go to the website, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, and put in Vietnam in the search engines, you can see some of the shows that we've done on this before. A few years ago, we had General Jack Vesey on the show. Mm-hmm. And as we all recall, he was the 10th chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And when he was done with that, President Reagan asked him to head up a commission to go track down the missing in action and the killed in action, which he thought was going to be a six-month process, turned into be a six-year process.
6 years, yeah.
And he tells us the story all about that. And then, of course, last year we had on Lieutenant Colonel Barry Bridger, and he told about his time as a POW. So there's a lot of information on the website available. Mm-hmm. In case our young people want to learn some history about it. And, Bob, I don't know about you, but I don't know where those 40 years went, and I don't feel like this is ancient history, but it's starting to get that way, isn't it?
No, you know, a lot of times people ask me when you were in Vietnam, and my response is, well, last week. You know, it's an ongoing process. We're still very active as far as trying to find the remains of the POWs or MIAs, in not only in Vietnam, but in Laos and Cambodia. This is an ongoing process, and I don't think at any time will we give up until we finally know where the last MIA is, and let's bring them home.
And we're not going to give up on taking care of our brothers that were in Vietnam. Absolutely. That need help and need some medical help and need some psychological help.
Absolutely not. All chapters of Vietnam Veterans of America throughout the nation, we're very, very active. We're very proactive in regards to the benefits that the Vietnam veterans justifiably deserve. And let's keep up. You know, there's a lot of problems with the VA, but let's keep the process going, and let's help all the Vietnam veterans. And all veterans, not just the Vietnam veterans.
Bob, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be joined by David Claypool from the Minnesota American ex-POWs. And in the second half of the show, we'll meet retired Navy Captain Arvin Chauncey, who was a POW for 6 years. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we've been talking about the Vietnam War and the peace accords that concluded on January 27, 1973, which led to the release of our POWs starting on March 4, 1973. And we've been talking to Bob Behrens, who is the president of Chapter 290, St. Cloud VVA. And Bob, I didn't mention it, but you're also the vice chairman of the Agent Orange Committee. Mm-hmm. And when we went to break, you were talking about still working to take care of our fellow Vietnam veterans, and Agent Orange it's done a lot of damage.
It's been an uphill battle, and more and more people are starting to realize that their children and their grandchildren, their great grandchildren, third, fourth generation they're still affected by Agent Orange. We still have two bills trying to get through the House and through the Senate, H.R. 1769, and Senate Bill 901. We've got a lot of co-sponsors. We've got a lot of representatives and congressmen that are behind it and supporting it. But Agent Orange is still, it's at the heart of every Vietnam veteran, and it's something that's not going to go away, not anytime soon.
And for our listeners, that was a herbicide that was used in Vietnam to clear the jungles away for a firing zone and to clear the jungles away from the rivers so our Navy could operate properly.
Yeah, we not only sprayed it in Vietnam, but in Cambodia, Laos. We sprayed 19 million gallons of it here in the United States. Right now they're talking about finding ways of curing cancer. Well, it's real easy. Quit making cancer-causing products, you know. Agent Orange is a 100-year dioxin that just, it's not good. It's bad for everything it touches. And the Vietnam veteran, boots on the ground, you know, was exposed to it.
And Bob, in this segment, joining us is David Claypool, who's the commander of the Minnesota American XPOWs. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate being here.
David, can you tell us just a little bit about your veteran service organization? I understand you're winding down a little bit because we don't have POWs these days, thank God.
Yes, and really thankful for all of that, and that we're celebrating this today and making note of our Vietnam veterans and also the POWs. Yes, we are winding down. We haven't enough able bodies to continue as we have in the past, and our numbers are getting less and less. And and what we really want to do is if we do close the organization, which we may do this fall, we want to do it with some of the same people that began this organization officially in 1986. It's the 30th year celebration this year.
And, of course, the Minnesota chapter keeps track of our Minnesota POWs from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, all through there. Mm-hmm. And we've had a number of Vietnam veterans right here in the Twin Cities and across Minnesota, haven't we?
We have 14. My numbers tell me that we have 14 that were prisoners of war from Minnesota and Vietnam. We currently have 5 prisoners of war from Vietnam, 4 officers and 1 enlisted man. And we have a mixed bag there where the enlisted person was actually kept in South Vietnam. So he has a different story than those in Hanoi.
And later on today, in the second half of the show, we're going to meet retired Navy Captain Arvin Chauncey and hear his story. And I'm glad to have him with us in the studio. Now, your organization, you've got a lot of information from many years of being in existence. Are you trying to figure out what you're going to do with all of that, all those records? And
They haven't done as much at the national level as I'd like, but in Minnesota for the last several years, we've been trying to get individuals, whether they're part of the American XPOWs in Minnesota or any former Minnesota POW, to put some of their material into the Minnesota History Center under a collection. And when we do, close our organization, we have material goods, and we'd like those to stay in the state on display for other veterans to see and for us, so we don't forget about those folks who have put it together and how important it is that we remember the POWs.
And Bob, I'm sure that the Minnesota chapter of Vietnam Veterans of America are interested in making sure we capture and keep all that information.
Absolutely.
On our Vietnam POWs.
Absolutely. That's living history. That's what it's all about. And whatever needs to be done, we'll step forward and do right, do the right thing.
And right now is probably a good time to tell our listeners that there's a special Vietnam exhibit up at the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley.
Yes.
And Camp Ripley is open when you're driving up to the lake and, mm-hmm. and going by there. You can just go to the front gate and tell them you want to go to that museum.
Yeah. It's an outstanding museum. There's a lot of history, a lot of stories, pictures, locations. It's very well done. It's one of the best military museums in this area. They put a lot of thought, a lot of time, and a lot of money into it. So if you want to know the history of Vietnam, that's the place to go because it'll start from day one all the way to the end.
So, and if you want to find some more information on that, go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, put in Vietnam exhibit mm-hmm. up in the search device. We did a whole show up there with Jim Fisher, and
glad
to hear he's doing well. And you can find out what that's all about and urge you to stop by there and see that exhibit and all the other information
Absolutely.
On Minnesotans that have gone to war all these years.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories on the wall there from Minnesota Vietnam veterans, and it's it's a good educational spot to take your family and learn about the Vietnam War.
We're speaking with Bob Behrens and David Claypool on Minnesota Military Radio about the Vietnam War, and dug in a little bit into the peace accords, which were signed on January 27th, 1973, which led to the release of our American POWs on March 4th, 1973. And David, you've met POWs from World War II, from Korea, from Vietnam. There's a lot of things similar, but there's a lot of things different, aren't there?
Well, there are, and I think that World War II is a different setting, obviously, from Vietnam. And however, the POWs all have some things in common, and I found over the years that they would compare notes from one war to the next, or they'd compare notes amongst themselves about their time as a POW. And I found that, I thought about that deeply, and I finally convinced them that they all had one thing in common, and that was they all lost their freedom. And whether it was any time in history where there was POWs, they all lost their freedom. And then each of the individuals had their own private experience after that. They may not have been alone, but they each had their own individual experience after that.
And they were all very resilient, the ones that made it home, weren't they?
They were very, very resilient. And the ones who didn't give up made it home. And those who did give up didn't last very long from the stories that I've heard. The thing that is important is that beneath the surface of every POW that I know lies all of this. And I call them combat plus. Combat soldiers have their issues, and then you make them a POW besides, and they're combat plus. And so these things float underneath the surface, and I have such deep respect for all of the POWs because they manage it well.
And one of the things we learned last year, we interviewed Lieutenant Colonel Barry Bridger on the show, and they'd done some psychological studies of the POWs, and they actually ended up having a lower incidence of PTSD, and the doctors and the prisoners of war themselves think that that was because they invented ways like the TAP codes to support each other and to take care of each other to the greatest extent possible. And they learned how to be resilient and get through things people couldn't dream of, and yet come back and spend a good portion of their life as a civilian and move on with things and put that terrible experience behind them. And we're going to find out some details on those specifics from retired Navy Captain Arvin Chauncey in the next segment. So we just got a minute or so left. David, any final thoughts for us?
Well, I think that let's do what we need to do to not get into circumstances where we lose so many people or have so many POWs. Hopefully we won't have many anymore. And just remember, the person that's standing next to you at the grocery store may have been a POW. Probably not going to say anything to you about that. So every once in a while, stop to think about what the person next to you may have experienced. If he or she were a POW, it would be a tough business.
Thanks, David. Bob, that's a good point. The guy living next door could have been, he probably was a hero at one point.
Yeah. Chances are your neighbor was a veteran. What we need to do is we need to stand fast, stand strong, and always have an outreach for veterans. Not just Vietnam, but all conflicts. And stand firm together and be proud of what we did, what we accomplished. Just reach out and say thank you for your service, because I know it's greatly appreciated.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for joining us today and invite you to stand by. We're going to hear some very interesting tales from retired Captain Arvin Chauncey in the third segment. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We've been talking with Bob Behrens and David Claypool. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Today's Yellow Ribbon Company Spotlight is U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank supports veterans and military family members through their Proud to Serve business resource group. U.S. Bank also has an internal social networking site that provides the opportunity to connect and network. They donate bank-owned homes to military service organizations, which in turn are donated to wounded veterans. U.S. Bank has a dedicated military recruiter who assists new applicants through the hiring process and connects new employees to current veteran team members. Proud to Serve chapters across the U.S. provide opportunities for U.S. Bank employees, including activities with military service organizations and Veterans Day celebrations. U.S. Bank has been a Yellow Ribbon company since January of 2012 and is honored and proud to be making a difference to service members, veterans, and their families.
You're listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Network. Stay tuned for more and follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll meet a Minnesotan who was a prisoner of war in Vietnam. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has been focused on ending veteran homelessness in Minnesota. As part of this goal, a computer application was established to help identify Minnesota's homeless veterans. Called the Veterans Registry, this computer application has greatly aided us, in partnership with other state agencies, to focus on ending veteran homelessness in Minnesota. The application has been so successful that it was selected as the winner of the prestigious 2015 Techie Award, which has been referred to as the Oscar for the information technology field. We are continually finding innovative ways to serve our veterans and their families.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. We've been talking today about the Vietnam War, the peace accords that concluded on January 27, 1973, and the return of our Vietnam POWs. And the first flight on that was actually on February 12, 1973, and I think the second flight was March 4, 1973. And joining us now to tell us firsthand about that war and that POW experience is retired Navy Captain Arvin Chauncey. Captain, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you so much, Tom, for inviting me to be here today. And before I take any of your questions, I really want to thank the two gentlemen that preceded me. And I really, really appreciate everything they're doing on my behalf and all the other POWs of all the wars that this country's been involved in. And I really appreciate that. And I applaud you for your efforts.
It's our honor, sir.
Thank you, Captain. Captain, can you tell us a little bit about your military career? When did it start?
I always wanted to fly ever since I was a little kid, and I went off to flight training on the 1st of October, 1955 as a Naval Aviation Cadet. And I enlisted in the Navy as a cadet in Los Alamitos, California, and it was off to Pensacola and start flight training, and I lucked out and spent 31 years active duty in the Navy, and I was lucky to fly right up until about the last 3 years of that career.
Captain, when I take a look at your bio, it looks like you flew a lot of aircraft.
I did. I was fortunate to start off flying the old SNJ tail dragger, as we called them, and over the years probably flew five or six different aircraft. And the last aircraft I was flying was the A-4 Skyhawk, a great little airplane to fly.
And, Captain, I understand that in October of 1966, as a lieutenant commander, you were shipped off to Southeast Asia.
That is true. I was in attack squadron 212 flying out of NAS Lemoore, California, and we went on that cruise and started my first experience of flying combat missions over North Vietnam.
And you were assigned to an aircraft carrier?
Yes. I was on the USS Bonhomme Richard.
And how many flights did you take off of that aircraft carrier?
Well, due to circumstances beyond my control, the North Vietnamese to be specific, I was on my 57th combat mission when I got shot down that particular day on 31 May 1950 or 1967.
And, Captain, if you don't mind, could you tell us about that day? It had to be a terrible day in your life.
It was. It's one of those things that every time we launched off the ship, you said a little prayer, I did anyway, in the cockpit, hoping you'd make it back to the ship after the mission. But this particular day, I was leading a flight of four. And then in front of us, leading the entire flight, a flight of six from our sister squadron, VA-76, or Attack Squadron 76. And we were en route to bomb a MiG base named KEP up northwest of Hanoi. So it was what was at that time called a major alpha strike up into the heaviest of defended areas of North Vietnam.
So you know you were going into the heat that day.
we were definitely going into the heat. Every time we went into Package 6, anything up in the northern part, Haiphong, Hanoi, we expected to really run into heavy anti-aircraft fire and surface-to-air missiles and even the chance of MiGs jumping us on the way to the target.
And, sir, what was it that took you down, that got you down that day?
Well, we were about 10 miles short of reaching the target, which was 60, 65 miles from the coastline. And we ran into a tremendous barrage fire, 85 millimeter, 57 millimeter, and later I found out even 100 millimeter anti-aircraft guns. And they were just truly zeroed in on our altitude. It just was an unbelievable amount of black puffs of flak that were going off around us. And it wasn't very long that we were into that mess that I got hit.
And did you know you were in trouble right away?
I knew I'd been hit because I had a young wingman on my wing who had just come out of flight training, and I felt what just felt like two pops of a beer can or something had broken the skin of my aircraft. I didn't have any big jolting, jarring, you know, gas and flames and thing like that, but talking to my wingman after I came home 6 years later, he said it looked like a shell exploded just right underneath my airplane. And all that shrapnel apparently went into the engine. And then to answer your question, right away the engine started failing, and I turned and we made a transmission that we were going to try to make it back to the water. And so my wingman and I made a turn and started trying to go back to the beach.
The airplane wasn't cooperating, I'm assuming.
No. No, basically the engine was winding down. He kept telling me there was fire coming out of the tailpipe. And if you were flying a jet over Texas in training, and somebody could confirm you on fire, and if you were open territory, you wouldn't hesitate to eject. But when you're 60 miles in over North Vietnam, I wasn't about to eject. I was going to try to make it to the water. And if I could make it to the water, I knew I could be rescued. But the engine wasn't cooperating, and I was basically trading altitude for airspeed to try to keep the airplane flying, just getting lower and lower.
How far do you think you made it?
I probably, it's hard to remember exactly, but I would guess at the rate of descent I had coming down, I probably got turned around and got back maybe 10, 15 miles before my wingman finally made a comment that I was really on fire. I noticed how low I was, and I made the decision that I was going to have to eject out of the aircraft.
Tough decision, tough day.
It was a tough decision. When I think back about it, but under the circumstances, there was absolutely no choice. It was either, you know, go in with the airplane and not survive, or use the ejection system and pull the handle and go.
So, sir, you did that and parachuted down. How long before you were captured?
I was on the ground probably an hour and 45 minutes, and that's another story we don't even have time to get into today, because there were some decisions made back at the carrier that they didn't want to send a helo in for me for whatever reason, I don't know. But bottom line, I had friendly aircraft over me. I was talking to them on my radio and hiding in the bushes. And bottom line, for an hour and a half, 45 minutes at least, they kept trying to get the ship to commit a helo to come get me. And about the time they saw me being captured, they said way down in the distance from their altitude, they could see a helo coming. But it was just too late, and I had no chance because they just didn't get it there in time.
We're speaking with retired Navy Captain Arvin Chauncey on Minnesota Military Radio. And, of course, as you now know, he was a Vietnam prisoner of war, and they captured you and taught you the meaning of torture. How long did that take, sir?
Well, the first day, the torture was just basically any time they were taking me through a village. And in the sense that it was almost like going through a gauntlet. The men, the women, the children were lined up, and you were being led through this, and they were trying to hit you or spit on you or hit you with rocks or anything they could, just taking their vengeance out on capturing an American prisoner.
And, Captain, I understand later that day you were in a stockade and you made an attempt to escape.
Yeah, I think it was the second night. I had come to the conclusion that they were going to kill me. I'm not sure my brain was functioning properly after being dehydrated and such long days with no food and the way I was being treated. And I basically made a run for it.
And that didn't work out so well.
No, it didn't work out. I was recaptured the same night, and if anything, I just made my treatment worse by making them get up at 2 or 3 in the morning to chase me.
So they weren't very happy with you?
No, very unhappy.
The rest of that night had to be pretty rough, sir.
It was. It was not a night that I'll ever forget.
And, Captain, how long did it take before they took you to where other prisoners of war were being held?
The next day, hogtied and blindfolded, threw me in the back of some kind of a vehicle. I just remember this god-awful ride, rough roads, and finally arriving in what I could hear city sounds. I'm blindfolded. I hear a metal door open and walk through, and I hear that door clunk behind me. And I've actually been taken into what's called Wallo. It was a big French prison in downtown Hanoi, probably built in, I'm guessing, 18th century by the French. And that was where I was going to eventually meet other prisoners, but it was going to be weeks because I was kept in solitary, and this is where I'm going to be really tortured.
Captain, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to ask you about those days in those prison camps and the other POWs that you were with. We're speaking to retired Navy Captain Arvin Chauncey about his time as a POW in Vietnam on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Today we've been talking about the Vietnam War, the peace accords that ended in January 27, 1973, and the return of our POWs, which began on February 12, 1973. And we've been talking in the third segment and this segment to retired Navy Captain Arvin Chauncey about his time in the Navy and when he was shot down on 31 May 1967, captured within a couple hours, tried to escape. That didn't work so well, and then they hauled him up to Hanoi. And, Captain, how long was it before you got to a prison camp and actually knew you were with some other Americans?
Well, when they took me back in that truck ride I described, basically I was taken into a room, blindfolded, blindfold comes off. And to make a long story short, I was read the camp regulations, which would have made us be a total putty in their hands to do anything they told us to do. And it was against everything I'd ever been trained, basically, to abide by the code of conduct. And they asked military questions, and I kept trying to deny that. And finally, and I'm compacting all this for you, they had to resort to physical torture, mostly with straps and ropes and irons and putting us into positions that were quite painful to try to elicit information from us. And I tried my darndest to give nothing but name, rank, serial number, and date of birth, as we were bound to, as the code of conduct was written in those days. And bottom line, almost every one of us couldn't stand that pain, and we used the term, they finally broke us. And basically then you just reverted to lying and telling stories. So over 3 days, I went through different forms of torture, of painful positions and stress, asking military questions that, honest to God, I didn't even know the answer to. What's the next target? What kind of weapons, et cetera, et cetera. But so that tells you a little bit of the initial how we were treated. And then I was put into solitary every night, and it was probably several weeks before I was moved blindfolded again to some other cell, which are all boarded up. And maybe 2 weeks later after that period in there, the door opened and in shoved an American in the same prison garb that I'm wearing. So this will be my first contact with another American, a freshly captured American Air Force captain.
Was there some relief that day, sir?
Yeah, it was fantastic, except one of the things we were always trained in survival school was to suspect the first person that's put in with you to be a spy. I know that sounds ridiculous, but this guy, his name is Ron Webb. He's a big, dark, burly-looking guy from the Chicago area. And I honestly, God, thought he was a Russian, but it only took a couple of minutes of talking to each other, and we knew we were a couple of Americans that had been captured.
And Captain, we've heard about the stories of repeated torture and deprivation and all these things. And did the North Vietnamese have a philosophy for what they thought of prisoners of war?
Well, I think the main thing that maybe a lot of people don't know, they have a vision of prisoner of war camps from movies they've seen, like Stalag 17, where it's a typical World War II prison camp, barbed wire, guard towers. The prisoners live in the middle in buildings at night, and the enemy lives on the outside in buildings. The Vietnamese philosophy for imprisonment was, first of all, we were in a giant old French prison, And if they would have had enough closets, sealed up closets, to put every one of us in solitary confinement and have kept us that way the whole time we were there, that's what they would have done. And the concept being, we can't organize, we can't communicate. If I take somebody out and kill them during interrogation, nobody knows because nobody's living together, nobody sees each other, total isolation. Thank God they didn't have enough closets to do that.
And, Captain, we've heard these stories, and the reality of it is that you found ways to communicate with the other POWs, and you even found ways to find out who the ranking officer was within each of the camps.
Yes, that's something we were always trained in survival school, too, is organize, and whoever senior is in command, I don't care who it is, no matter where you are in the rank structure, if you're the senior person, you're in command. And it took days before my new roommate, Ron, and I found out how to do what's been called the TAP code, and I understand there's been people on the program that have explained that. But that was our primary source of communication if you had a wall between you and another group of prisoners, was tapping on the wall and sending messages. And then we devised ways to have a one-hand alphabet where if you could climb on somebody's shoulders and look out a little vent and see across the compound to another building with a vent, we had people stand up there, and you'd think that they were deaf mutes their entire life. They got so good at this one-hand alphabetic communication technique. Bottom line, every place I was at, I knew the name of everybody else in that group, who the senior officer was, who was in command, who was second in command if they took away the commanding officer. So we were completely organized to resist the whole time.
We're speaking with retired Navy captain and Vietnam prisoner of war, Arvin Chauncey, on Minnesota Military Radio. And Captain, it seems amazing that you could learn the TAP code and the sign language and all of that that quickly, but you really had nothing but time on your hands, didn't you?
Well, actually, Tom, we didn't learn it that quickly. I'll never forget the day that the TAP code was passed to us through a boarded-up window by some fellow POWs who were out at a cistern throwing water on their bodies. About once a week, they would take you around there one room at a time to do that. And the voice came through the wall, and it said, "Hi, I'm Lieutenant Commander K. Russell. Take the alphabet, drop the K, put it in five columns, and remember American Football League quits victorious. Contact you at noon." I looked at my roommate and we said, "Gee, we're both college graduates. What the hell is he talking about?" It probably took us, maybe 4 or 5 days of them tapping and we to figure out how simple that concept was. We finally figured it out. And then I got so good at that, tapping on the walls, that you'd think for almost 6 years, tapping on the walls, you really, really got good at doing it.
Captain, that was a lot of years ago. Can you think you can still do it today?
I can remember how it goes. I'm not sure I'd be as adept at listening from the other side and picking it up as fast, but I could get back right into it if I had to.
Captain, one of the things that I found interesting was you told me you memorized the names of all the prisoners of war that you could verify were there.
That's true. The names trickled in, so it's not like all of a sudden you had 400, 300 names to memorize. As people were captured, got into the system, once we could communicate with them, that was one of the first things we wanted to know. What's your name? And that name would then go into the system, and we would add it alphabetically. And if you've got nothing else to do, believe me, you can memorize 350 names alphabetically. You don't even have a watch to know what time it is.
Captain, when it came down to the end, and did you have any notion that the peace accords were going to be signed? Did you have any notion that the end of the captivity was coming right towards the end?
That old saying that knowledge is power, occasionally one of the turnkeys who they were hearing news from the Vietnamese side would drop a little tidbit like Kissinger is in Paris, peace talks going on. So it was just rumored among us, and it made our spirits go up, but we were not getting any real information. They kept us in the dark right up until the day that my group left. We didn't know the day we were leaving. So bottom line, we knew something was going on. Things were happening the way they were positioning in rooms because we came home by shoot-down date. So we saw those things happen. So we had an idea, but there was just nothing firm enough to say, yep, I'm going home on the 4th of March. I didn't know that till the 4th of March.
Had to be a great day, sir.
It was the most wonderful day of my life, with a few exceptions. But I'll tell you, that was a great day to take that bus ride out to Gia Lam. And when we saw those airplanes sitting out there with American flag on the tail, there wasn't a dry eye in the crowd. And walking up that ramp and being on that airplane, and just it was just amazing to fly to the Philippines and then to come on home.
And, Captain, you stayed in the service for another 13 years, and I think your last assignment was as commander of the ROTC unit at the University of Minnesota for 3 years. I'll bet those students had some questions for you about the time you spent as a POW.
They did, and that was a wonderful experience to spend my last 3 years of active duty with the NROTC here at the U of M. I really enjoyed being with all those young men and women, and to this day, I still go back and speak, and I'm scheduled to go over and speak to them, actually, in March. And I've watched some of them go through their entire careers that were midshipmen when I first started, and I still occasionally will get a call or something, and people will say something to me about something they heard me say that helped them or they used as they went on through their careers in the Navy or the Marine Corps. So, yeah, it was a great experience, and I really enjoy when I can still go back and talk to the midshipmen.
Captain, we've just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners about your time in the Navy and your experience as a prisoner of war in Vietnam?
I guess the only thing I can say is it seems like ancient history right now. It's like the average person saying, well, let's talk about back when you were in high school, the 3 or 4 years you were in high school. It's like over 40 years ago. And I don't really think about it that much unless I'm doing something like what we're doing today. So bottom line, I thank the people that I'm sitting here with today that are carrying on these efforts to help veterans and do things of that nature. But honestly, when I came home, I just decided I was going to get on with my life and keep flying and finish my career in the Navy, and that's what I've done. But again, I just don't think about it that much unless it just comes up for some particular event.
Captain, looks like you're still going strong, and I hope that goes on for a long time. Thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It was my pleasure to be here.
It's a retired Navy captain and prisoner of war, Arvin Chauncey, at Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Tim Leonhardt. Tim, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, Tom.
Tim, as you know, this whole show today, we've been talking about the Vietnam War and the peace accords and the release of our Vietnam POWs 43 years ago. I don't know where all those years went, but that one was quite a while ago. I imagine you're seeing all too many of my Vietnam buddies at their final rites.
Yep, we've had the honor, and we still have the honor of being invited to a lot of the Vietnam veterans' funerals.
And you go out to about 500 of these things every year.
Every year.
And give all of our veterans honor, dignity, and respect at the end of their lives.
Yep. Did you know about half of our membership is probably close to being Vietnam era?
Well, we've talked about that because when we first went on the air a few years ago, we had to break the myth that the Minnesota Patriot Guard is all Vietnam veterans and they're all motorcyclists.
Right.
But we've learned it can be anybody.
Anybody.
They don't have to ride a motorcycle. They can go in that cage like I do.
Yes.
Drive the truck. All they need is a good heart and a flag and a pole all I have to do is go to your website, which is
mnpatriotguard.org.
And click on join.
Join. Yep. We'll give you emails letting you know what's going on. You can go to our webpage and look at the calendars. There's a lot of stuff coming up.
And your ride captains post when there's a mission. And if you're available, you just show up and the ride captains show you what to do. And you can go out there and experience that wonderful thing that you guys do. Stand on the flag lines.
It is. It's very, very honorable. You get a lot out of it. You do a lot good for the families.
Well, Tim, I want to thank you and all the Patriot Guard riders for taking such good care of my Vietnam veterans as they leave this world for the next.
It's our honor.
And it's a pleasure to have you here again in the studio with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
This is Tim Leonhardt from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard and Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Bob Behrens, David Claypool, retired Navy Captain Arvin Chauncey, Tim Leonhardt, Commissioner Larry Shalito of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk to the Armed Forces Service Center about 50 years of selfless service and learn about the VA's MOVE program. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.